Welcome to this deep dive. Today we're looking at a single, incredibly dense document, the Western Cape Government Health 2017-18 Annual Report. And I mean, our mission here for you listening is really to extract how a massive resource-constrained system manages to bend but not break during a year of, well, biblical-level disasters.
Yeah, and to fully grasp the pressure they were under, you really have to look at their baseline. I mean, we're talking about a system serving 6.5 million people, and over 75% of them are completely uninsured.
Wow, so they rely entirely on the public safety net.
Exactly. And in just this one year alone, the system handled over 14.1 million primary care contacts. All of this is happening while they're already battling a quadruple burden of disease. So they were, you know, constantly juggling HIV and TB, complex maternal health issues, chronic illnesses, and extremely high rates of trauma.
Okay, let's unpack this, because then you throw in a drought so severe, the entire province was declared a disaster area. Plus, massive storms, the devastating Nizna fires, and literally the Swartland Hospital burning to the ground. It's like trying to conduct a complex symphony while the concert hall is literally on fire.
That is the perfect analogy. And honestly, you would expect a government department's budget to just absolutely implode trying to manage all that chaos. But what's fascinating here is how fiscal discipline survived alongside disaster management. They actually maintained an unqualified, clean audit for the 14th year in a row.
Wait, really? 14 years. How do you even pull off a clean audit when you're suddenly deploying emergency responses across multiple disaster zones?
Right. It sounds impossible. But they managed it by meticulously siloing their emergency funds. Instead of indiscriminately pulling from long-term clinical budgets to fight those literal fires, they separated the disaster response from daily operations.
Oh, I see. So the core healthcare network didn't have to break financial compliance rules just to keep local clinics running.
Exactly. But maintaining fiscal continuity is one thing. Money doesn't directly treat patients. When your physical infrastructure is burning down, ensuring clinical continuity requires something far more structural.
Yeah. How do you keep track of millions of vulnerable people when clinics are flooding? It sounds like they built the system like a decentralized power grid. If one substation goes down, the data instantly reroutes.
That is the exact architecture of their digital backbone. To survive physical disasters, they relied on a bulletproof digital system. Specifically, their unique patient identifier, or PMI, running through the Clinicom Health Information System. It spans 54 hospitals and 300 primary healthcare facilities.
I do have to push back a little on massive government IT rollouts, though. Usually they just mean, you know, crushing administrative red tape for an already exhausted nursing staff. Does a massive database actually help a sick patient walking into a crowded clinic?
I get that, but if we connect this to the bigger picture, it really does. Precisely because they designed it so a single record follows the patient everywhere permanently. They never delete historical data, which hosts about 13 million patients.
So if a fire displaces someone, they don't lose their medical history.
Right. If the Swartland fire displaces a patient and they walk into a clinic 50 miles away, the new doctor instantly pulls their complete medical history. The PMI actively reduces wait times and stops doctors from running duplicate tests.
Which saves critical time and money. But, you know, technology is completely useless without the 32,000 staff executing the care.
Absolutely. And even in the middle of these overlapping crises, their medical outcomes were just staggering.
Yeah, here's where it gets really interesting. They drove the mother-to-child HIV transmission rate down to just 0.2% at 10 weeks.
And achieving that 0.2% wasn't just luck. It was about rigorously protecting the medication supply chain. They used mobile clinics to ensure antiretrovirals reached pregnant mothers, even when major roads were completely compromised by fires and storms.
That human resilience aspect is just incredible. And another perfect example of that is the Red Cross Radio Project. It wasn't just about keeping kids alive through medicine. They literally had the patients at the Red Cross War Memorial Children's Hospital launching and managing their own radio station.
Right. They focused on dignity and joy. By handing the mic over to the children, the system actively fostered a sense of community. They understood that structural resilience requires maintaining agency for vulnerable patients caught in compounding disasters.
So for you listening, this isn't just an administrative report. It's really a masterclass in resilient management that anyone facing burnout or crises can learn from. you have to build decentralized structures before a crisis hits.
Exactly. It leaves you pondering, if the Western Cape could forge such an interconnected, crisis-proof health system while battling unprecedented droughts and fires back in 2017, how might their crisis-tested strategies become the exact blueprint the rest of the world needs for global public health in an era of accelerating climate change?
That is definitely something to mull over as we look toward an unpredictable future. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.